This is Brian Wappler with another episode of the Chasing Tone Podcast, the podcast about guitars, amps, effects, as well as a healthy dose of interesting off-topic discussions. Joining me today again is Blake Weiland, host of the Tone Mob Podcast, entrepreneur, and effects pedal junkie, as well as Richard Oliver, Wampler's own man of many hats, longtime tone chaser, and digital entrepreneur.
Oh boy, that would have been bad. We would have gotten in trouble for all of that.
Maybe so. There might have been some illegal things done. I don't know.
At the very least, our covers of those songs were illegal. At the very least.
Okay, your Australian accents were definitely illegal.
So we were talking Men at Work. What are the Men at Work songs that were popular? Because I know there was more than you thought. One. I know there was more than two. Down Under is one, of course.
And that's the end of this conversation.
Oh, they've been around forever.
Men at Work. What's going on, Men at Work?
What about Survivor? Name another Survivor song other than Eye of the Tiger. Not Googled, Brian.
I'm high on you. That one.
Apologies to our listeners for hearing.
I hear sirens pulling up right now. We're going to be arrested for this.
Yeah, Overkill. That's the other one I was thinking of. Overkill was the third hit from Men at Work.
I'm not sure that charted over here.
It's just overkill.
That's it.
In case our listeners are wondering, Brian hasn't been taking any magic mushrooms today. Just the caffeine.
What is fungible. In the coffee?
The fungibles.
He's not been on the fungibles.
Oh, nothing against those who are on the fungibles, though. Especially if they're tokens.
You know, they're delicious.
they stay crispy in milk. I get it.
How are we doing?
What's going on today, boys? So there's a musical on pedals.
Yeah,
a musical,
man.
On pedals.
Yeah, I was actually really surprised. Not surprised. I mean, that sounds horrible. I was surprised. I thought it'd suck. No, I was surprised because I was thinking a musical about guitar pedals. How do you do that? But watching it, I'm like, this is pretty damn entertaining, you know? And plus, historically correct.
Right, exactly.
I felt like at the end of it, I was like, all right, that's the 60s. When's the 70s coming out? You know, when's the next decade of effects coming out? I want to see the next one. Oh, we should probably tell people what we're talking about.
Oh,
so
yeah,
Jay just released a musical about guitar pedals. It's on YouTube now. And it's literally the story of guitar pedals, how it started up until, I guess, the 70s. And it left me wanting more, which I guess if you're writing a musical, you want that, right?
I found it very informative. I don't know the history of pedals as well as I perhaps would like to. And I actually found some of it really informative. And of course, some of it was just plain silly and very funny. But yeah, it was very well made, I thought.
I was talking to Josh about it a couple of weeks ago off the air. And he was like, okay, let me try to explain this concept to you. You're going to think I'm insane. And once he like told me, I was like, I could picture it in my head. And it actually came out almost exactly like what I was imagining it to be. And yeah, it's not very often you're going to get me to sit through a YouTube video that long. And I watched the whole thing and I thought it was a lot of fun. And like Brian, I'm kind of looking forward to the next one.
Sorry.
No, you're fine. I have to say, so Josh, who is the English accent he did? He did an English accent in it of...
I think it was the owner of Macari's musical shop in London, wasn't
it? Okay, yeah. And Josh, I love you, but you sound like Austin Powers.
And I'm just going to tell all our listeners, Brian doesn't have a great English accent because whenever he rings me, he always sort of starts off by going, hello, mate, as if...
Hello, my man. How are you doing today? Right, right.
And that's not how we sound in this country. But yeah, the English accent.
Bob's your uncle, isn't it?
Bob's your uncle.
That's better. Yeah, no, that's not bad. I'm a fan of that, Blake. You impressed me with your Bob's your uncle reference. I did really enjoy the musical. I'm wondering if they bring it up to date. Who's going to play you, though, Brian? or one of your pedals.
It's funny that you mentioned that. I actually thought that through. And I was like, I could see Matthew McConaughey. I could probably see that. Yeah.
Not bad. Yeah.
Maybe if he puts on a little muscle, you know, a little more hair, we'll be good.
Oh, not Dallas Buyers Club, Matthew McConaughey?
No, wrong Matthew McConaughey. No. Handsome hunk, Matthew. That's what I'm going for.
Ah, yes. Lincoln lawyer. I got you. Okay.
It's either that or it's Dana Carvey, one or the other.
I mean, he's going to have to do a sequel.
Now that you think about it, you are kind of a blend of the two. You threw Dana Carvey and Matthew McConaughey in a blender to get Brian Wampler.
Oh, that's my pick anyways.
Yeah, I look forward to that.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Everybody go check it out. It should be noted also that they did it live. It was initially a live video, and they recorded it all, obviously, and posted it later. So what you're watching is a live performance. It's not like edited together. Well, it is edited together, but it's all done on the fly, costume changes and all. So kind of a unique piece of content. I quite enjoyed it.
Definitely, yeah, I agree.
Definitely unique. I look forward to the sequel.
What else we have on the agenda?
I was just going to say, Brian's just necked something that looks like magic mushrooms again. He's on the fungibles tonight.
Might be a fungible. Might be a fungible. No, I was honestly, I mean, the JHS thing, I was trying to think, like, once you get to, like, late 90s or 2000s, it becomes incredibly more complicated.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, every business has grown sort of exponentially market-wise as population has grown and as communication has grown. So yeah, it's just, yeah. But I want to see someone dressed up as a Line 6 pedal because they always look weird as hell.
Right.
You could have two people. It'd be like the pantomime horse where you have someone dressed as the front and someone as the back. You could be the pantomime Line 6 pedal.
What do you do for multi-effects though? Once you start getting into, you know, like Boss RP1s and stuff. Pods, Line 6 pods even. What do you do?
The pod's easy because it was quite small. So you just have someone dressed as a kidney bean shape. I never understood the shape of that. Was there a reason behind that?
That's a good question. Who was in the marketing meeting and thought, I got it. You all like beans and cornbread, right? Check this out. So we make it the shape of a bean. You know, like.
Yeah. Yeah. You're onto something. If you make it a bean shape, that just follows the natural curvature of your toes.
Right, right.
You still haven't been to the chiropodist then, I take it, Blake.
Your feet don't look like that? No?
No. Yeah. I'd never understood that. But yes, definitely look forward to seeing someone dressed up as a Line 6 pod or one of them wide delay units that
the
you love
DL4s.
So much. Yeah.
I like my DL4, yes, sir.
But yeah, definitely some funny, and as you say, Blake, I watched it through all the way, and rarely do I sit through something all the way in one sitting anyway. So that's going to get a ridiculous number of hits. That's going to, it's essentially going to become legendary. I think it's great to have people like that in this industry to make us all giggle.
Yeah,
definitely. Who is your favorite?
Brian doesn't.
Before we segue completely out of this, who is your
mine
favorite?
Was Octavia.
Okay. Mine was.
I'm going to go
well,
out there.
Octavia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought Octavia had the best voice.
I think
the best song.
Well, see, I guess I'm not looking at it that way. I guess I was thinking of
what's your favorite pedal?
Like, how do you pick out like your favorite character? I mean, I like the fuzz part of it. Honestly, I thought it was kind of fascinating how the fuzz
face,
the whole thing was fuzz.
I was like, the whole thing was fuzz. What are you talking about?
So that's minutes 1 to 26.
You're right. Right. I mean, sorry. I was thinking the it would be the fuzz face, the Arbiter fuzz face.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I mean, this is I just don't study history at all. I'd never looked at the Fuzz Face Wikipedia page. I did not know that that pedal was created from the base of a microphone stand. I had no idea until I watched that JHS video. And apparently that's like everyone knew that but me.
I forgot until then. That reminded me that I used to know that like 5 years ago. I totally forgot that's where it came from. And now it makes more sense, right? It's like, why is it round? Nothing else is round. Oh, this guy who didn't know anything about any of this stuff thought it would look cool. That's what, right. Why it's round.
And Josh's character on that was great. Oh, God, it looks like a face.
Please, you're killing me, guys. I have to say, he must have pre-cleared it with Mike Matthews.
Oh, though. His Mike Matthews bit. I forgot about
the Mike Matthews bit. That was
fantastic. I need to actually text him. I want to know so bad if that was a real cigar he was chewing on. I've never seen Josh, you know, smoke a cigarette, or I can't imagine him putting a cigar in his mouth.
Wow.
So I liked how he was like, come on, kid, smoke this. I don't smoke. Right.
Yeah, bring it in here. Yeah, that was great, man. To listeners, you got to watch it. Just look up the JHS musical. You'll find it. It's got 40,000, 100 billion, trillion views now. So you'll find it.
Yep.
Cool. So other things, we can't let this one go. The new Acoustasonic Jazzmaster. Blake.
Yeah. So I think I've talked about it on this show before. The Acoustasonic stuff, I was extremely against when I first saw it. I was like, this is dumb. It's not gonna work. I don't like it. No, thank you. And then I played the Telecaster at NAMM. I was like, I'll pick this stupid thing up and see what it's all about. And my mind was immediately changed. I was like, oh, wow, this actually is really, it is as advertised. It's a cool sounding blend of electric and acoustic that is truly a unique sound. And the Jazzmaster, I didn't think looked as good, like especially in the photos. But once I watched a bunch of demos with it and looked at it from different angles, I'm like more on board with it now than I was at first. And I'm super on board to hear that Tim Shaw designed humbucker that they've got in the thing.
Yeah. No.
Well, it's never going to be aesthetically my favorite design.
No.
I think the Sonics might make up for it.
It does very much look like Salvador Dali designed it. It looks like a strap melted on a beach somewhere. So design wise, never going to win me over, but I'm desperate to have my hands on probably the Telecaster version, but one of those Acoustasonics, because they do sound, as you say, really exactly what they pretend to be, that blend in between the two.
Yeah, which, not
on
a fan.
The face of it, yeah, I knew Brian wasn't going to like it.
That's why I gave it to you first, so we could have the positive spin first.
What don't you like about it, Brian, other than it's not a Telecaster?
It's basically not a Telecaster or a 335. So, yeah. Sucks!
Brian was noodling on the 335 before we started. It sounded pretty good, guys. I'm not going to lie.
Those 335s are magic. And by the way, the Wampler Pedals group on Facebook for showing all the Gibson 335s. I had to actively avoid the whole Facebook thing yesterday because I kept wanting to open up Reverb and look for Gibson 335s.
I've started looking at them too. I'm not going to lie, Brian. You've infected me.
I'm going to buy one. I already know it. I've been wanting to buy that Emily Wolf signature that I've talked about on here before, and it just released today officially. And yeah,
that
black,
looks lovely.
Matte gold, diamond F holes. I'm so pumped. I'm actually having her back on the podcast next week to talk about it. So that'll be fun.
I'm trying to find it. I don't see the gold one. I see the cherry red one.
It's black.
No, it's just black. And then the hardware is instead, it's gold, but instead of being shiny gold.
Oh, I see it.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I think they're calling it the Stealth Sheridan, I think is what they're calling it.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And the diamond F holes.
Brian's gone to his happy place. For those of us who can see it, His eyes have glazed over.
www.reverb.com.
Funnily enough, I had the craziest reverb experience earlier.
Mom.com/reverb, Brian, if you're going to go through with it, you know.
Sorry. Let me give you a little affiliate income. We'll go through tonemob.com/reverb to throw Blake a thanks.
Thank you.
So I was flicking through Facebook earlier, as I tend to do, and an advert came up for Reverb. I was like, that's a friend of a friend of mine. And I knew he was kind of like a fairly famous guitarist. He's been around for a while. I actually didn't realize how long he'd been around for until I sort of reached out to my friend and said, I just saw Stuart's guitar. Stuart's my friend. I just saw your friend Steve's guitar on Reverb. It's beautiful. Can he drop it by 90% of the cost, please? Because it's up for about £13,000. It's like a 1970 Strat that he used when he toured with The Who. So it has some provenance. And it's in that gorgeous yellow color that I love. And I was like, oh. But yeah, kind of freaky coincidence when you sort of see your friend scroll past you like that, and you're like, wait a minute, that's his guitar. Oh, I can't afford it.
For a second there, I thought you were going to mention it was David Gilmour's guitar or something. I was like, oh God, here we go again.
Oh, you're not going to rag on me about the Gilmour already, are you? You know, I've got backup this week, don't you?
You know, I mean, Gilmour is no George Lynch. You know, let's just, you know, George Lynch,
you can
no
say
Nuno
that
Bettencourt.
Again.
I respect him, but he doesn't have the widdly widdlies, you know?
He does have the widdly widdlies, just not those sort of widdly widdlies. Funnily enough, we were having this debate last night, because we'll come back to Gilmour in a minute because there's more mileage here, but Brian found it fascinating when I told him that in this country, the whole hair metal thing of the 80s didn't really hit in the same way. We had our own hair metal, but Motley Crue was not the biggest band on the planet, and nor were Rat or Cinderella or any of Brian's other favorites, including Dokken.
I feel really bad about your childhood and being deprived of those great treasures that we had here in America.
I mean, I kind of went straight through to thrash metal because I was a skater kid and my friend got me into Anthrax and Metallica, who were brand new back then. And
well, plus you didn't have any good damn music, you know?
we had Iron Maiden. We didn't need anything else. I told you this.
Okay, I love Maiden. I mean, Iron Maiden has its definite place, but you can't skip from Iron Maiden to Pearl Jam or whatever you guys. You got to have the 80s, but you got to have the Dokken. And even when that went into Lynch Mob, it was like a totally different band, still with the man George Lynch behind it, you know? I mean, don't even get me started on Lynch Mob. but, I mean, like, you had no Lay It Down, no Way Cool Junior. You didn't have, any Cinderella. You said Cinderella wasn't even that popular over there.
We knew who they were.
You had Fly to the Angels, though, right?
What's that?
What? My life is a lie.
I mean, we might have done, and I might not have paid attention to it, to be fair, because, as I said, I was listening to a lot of Iron Maiden when I was a teenager, and not a lot of American metal, although I did have a friend who traded me the Girls cassette tape for Live After Death, and I did listen to that album when it came out. It was all right. It wasn't Maiden, though.
Okay, but did you at least have Megadeth or Metallica prior Black Album stuff, like proper Metallica?
Oh, yeah. I mean, probably the first metal record I bought was either, as in vinyl, was either Megadeth, Peace Sells But Who's Buying, or I think it was Helloween, Keeper of the Seven Keys, Part 1? I think either of those albums, but yeah, Megadeth, I was a huge fan of, and yeah, Metallica, I kind of got into it, Ride of the Lightning when that came out, and then Master of Puppets. So I then sort of went off it all, and Metallica weren't even part of my you know, my tape cassette collection.
You became a big fan of Tone Loke, didn't you?
That's it. I went into my...
MC Hammer and Tone Loke. Tell the truth. You're busting a move.
Don't knock MC Hammer. I did try to teach Anna the MC Hammer dance the other night because she's got moves and I haven't. And she could have pulled it off because she had some baggy trousers on. But that's a whole different story. And she won't thank me for sharing that, I'm sure.
So speaking of spouses, apparently my wife listened to this podcast. Well, I think it was last week we were talking about Glitter and the Grout.
Uh-oh.
Uh-huh. Oh, no.
She listened to it. And she's like, you're an idiot.
So what's new?
She said, you guys are so boring. Oh, my God, you're so boring. And I'm like, well, you're not. It's not for you. Yeah, but it's okay.
I feel personally.
Are we boring because we don't want glitter in the grout? Is that what makes us boring?
Apparently, she just wasn't a fan of all the guitar gear talk and you know that sort of thing.
We barely even talked about guitar gear last week.
Maybe she's trying to tell me something.
Wait a minute. Maybe we need to talk about guitar gear.
I think that's the perfect cue for you to go and buy a Gibson 335 and say, look how glittery this finish is.
Oh, I would love to buy one, but it's just a bad use of money. Like it's like, okay, if I have $3,000, I could either do one of these other 1,000 things or buy another 335. I need to sell guitars. I need to sell guitars.
I think you do because you've got too many. You should send them to me first.
I mean,
I've said a lot of things on this podcast that I disagree with, and this has got to be the top of the whole heap. This is ridiculous. I don't want to hear this.
I quit.
Yeah.
I guess I start to think, okay, if the strings rust on it because I haven't played it, I need to sell it. You know, someone else needs to play this thing, you know? I mean,
or you just need to play it.
Why would I have a 335 and the best Telecaster in the world?
Oh, well.
You know?
Because you don't have
so
the best.
So you're really thinking you can go down to two.
Ugh. No, I can't. But I do have a Paul Reed Smith SE that I never, ever, ever play. Well, actually, I can't. I need that for testing, so I can't get rid of that.
Nice excuse.
I have a Brent Mason Valley Arts that I'd never play, but I just keep it because I'm a Brent Mason fan. But I probably should sell that and buy the Fender Brent Mason, though.
This is a plan. This I like. This is sensible. Mm-hmm. Upgrading, not cross-grading.
Yeah. I'm here.
I don't like. I don't even know how many Telecasters. I have so many Telecasters that I don't know how many I have. That's frivolous.
How many Fender Telecasters do you have?
Oh, Fender Telecasters? I have two.
See, I don't have any. I have two Telecasters. Neither of them are Fenders. So I am thinking I need to amend this situation at some point and see what the OG's like.
Yeah, I mean, they're my least favorite ones, honestly.
Okay, but you've got fancy connections that get you, like, properly built artisanal sourdough type.
I do know people that know people, right. So that does help. That does help sometimes.
Have either of you guys ever played a Sur, just while we're on the...
I've played Andes.
Yeah, I have. Mm-hmm.
And are they as good as everyone says? Oh, you can't say anything negative, clearly, but the Sur... T style has definitely popped up a few times in my feed, and I thought, one day. And of course,
this is my take on it. And I think that they're great. They're tremendously built instruments, but that for me, every time I've played one, and granted, this hasn't been very many times. It's only been like two or three times. It kind of reminded me of that thing where, like, you know how a PRS is kind of perfect,
right?
Too perfect in a weird way.
If you're
not
fighting against it, there's no soul.
Yeah, it that's kind of what the Surs have reminded me of. It's like, man, this is almost too good of a guitar, if that makes any sense. I know that probably sounds insane, but that's kind of my take on it. I'm like, now this guitar is almost, it's just not arguing with me quite enough. I need somebody to talk back a little bit. Not that I want it to be uncomfortable. I don't know. It just didn't fire me up the way I like a guitar to fire me up.
I've played Andy Woods whenever, like at NAMM and stuff, but I've never owned one. I know John Sir makes great stuff. I mean, people love his guitars and, you know, they do great work. But I know when I played Andy's, like, this is heavy. Not super heavy, but it felt just heavier than what I was used to. And I tend to like really light guitars. And at the end of the day, every time I play a Telecaster, I sound like a commercial, but I keep thinking this just isn't a Whitfield, you know, which is the ones that my other Telecasters are. It just, I guess I'm just so used to those, and those just feel like home. So it's
interesting. Well, I might get to try your Whitfield at some point if, you know, the world goes back to normal, but it's
looks like they're doing NAMM this year.
Yeah. Yeah. I did find listening to your Tone Mob podcast the other day with Josh and his sort of NAMM views on that quite interesting, actually, Blake.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that he came to the conclusion he did, which is we're not doing NAMM before NAMM got canceled.
Yeah.
Which I guess we knew about, but
it was interesting to hear his take on it.
Yeah, basically, in a nutshell, for those who haven't listened to it yet, Josh basically said, we spent like $50,000 doing NAMM, and they got everything loaded up in the crate, and they were like sitting in the car going to the airport or whatever exactly the situation was. I can't remember, but basically the end of NAMM. And he just looked at the team and is like, we're not doing this next year. We're not. Like, and that was before COVID was in full effect. So that's just the conclusion he came to in a nutshell. There's more nuance to it if you want to go and listen, but that's the nutshell version.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm feeling at right now. You know, we talked about it before. The biggest thing I'll miss is, you know, hanging out with people that I only get to see at NAMM and actually meeting customers, you know, in person. But as far as what NAMM used to be for, doesn't really serve its purpose for us anymore.
I got a ton of messages after that episode as well, because Josh and I had talked about the thing that you and I, Brian, have talked about on this show a million times. It's just like, how about all of us pedal people just pick a spot and a day or 2 days and have our own thing? Like, how much cooler would that be? And Josh was like, yeah, let's do it, basically. So,
yeah,
you know, if the Rona gets behind us, I actually think that's more likely to happen than it ever has been. I'm definitely more down to like take a role and try to push that idea forward, because I think a lot of people would be into it. And I got a ton of messages from people being like, yes, please make this a thing. Pedals and food trucks, it can't get any better than that.
Will the food trucks serve black puddings and baked beans?
Oh, stop.
I texted Blake earlier about pizza, and his response was, I'm not having any of your beans on toast. Come on now. What's wrong with you? That's a delicacy, Blake.
Taco trucks is what we need.
Yeah, taco trucks. Definitely taco trucks, burger trucks, pizza trucks, falafel trucks, you know,
fry up trucks, fish and chip trucks.
Yes, definitely. We actually have a really great fish and chip truck here in Portland. The Frying Scotsman, it's called.
Oh, very good. Nice. Nice.
Comes with a free dose of statins to lower your blood pressure. Cholesterol.
But also, you don't have the right cod over there, because Atlantic cod and Pacific cod and North Atlantic cod are all very different, apparently. So your fish is invalid.
Your fish have weird accents, I guess, huh?
Our fish are fancy. They wear bow ties.
They're like, do you have any kind of worms, any other type of worms right there, mister?
I've had your fish, Richard, and I got to say, it is very, very good, but we have some contenders here in town that I think you would approve of.
I'm sure I would. I'm being very mean to you again, Blake. I feel sometimes I pick on you because you do live in the hipster capital of the entire universe, and I can see nothing other than you walking down the street and being passed by penny farthings and things like that. So I apologize.
I wouldn't have it any other way. You know, I love it.
Awkward silence.
Yes. Like so, a deep breath.
Well, I was just about to tell you guys about my new MIDI switcher setup. I've joined the dark side finally, and I've got a switcher plumbed into my board. Funnily enough, it was because I was chatting to the gentleman we're about to talk to, Lee, and I'll introduce a little bit more about him in a minute. But I needed to get real control over certain parameters, and the only way really was via MIDI. So I thought, let me give it a go. And I found it really, really easy. And I now have, you'd be so super happy for me, Brian, I have a total of 20 Pink Floyd patches all set up so I can play through an hour-long set of Pink Floyd by just tapping like two buttons at a time.
Well, you know the worst part about that?
Go for
it. You'd have to play an hour of Pink Floyd.
See, he just couldn't leave it. So I think it's probably a good time for me to bring on board my bouncer for this evening, I guess. I'm just going to try and patch him in. This is a gentleman called Lee Harris, who plays in a band called Nick Mason's Saucerful of Secrets, and he plays lead guitar. Nick Mason was, for your information, Brian, because I know you don't know, Nick Mason was the drummer of Pink Floyd when they were still playing together, an absolute musical legend, and he decided to go on tour with a kind of band of, I guess you could say, seasoned session musicians, but when I tell you the lineup, it's a little bit better than that. And do all of Pink Floyd's early music.
Oh, well, see, you lost me there. I was thinking, all right, well, he got out of the hell he was in. but then he went and played songs that were inside of the hell he was at. What? What kind of sense does that make?
Oh, you're so, so wrong. I mean, for people who've never really heard anything other than Another Brick in the Wall Part 2, i.e. Brian, that, you know, Pink Floyd prior to Dark Side of the Moon were at the forefront of British psychedelic rock, which I believe we probably exported out to your country. And, you know, you probably still need to thank us for that. Probably not. But no, they're an amazing band. So it's Lee on guitar. He's joined by Gary Kemp, who was one half of the Kemp Brothers in Spandau Ballet. Guy Pratt on bass guitar, who was Pink Floyd's touring bass player. I've seen him play with David Gilmour. He also played some of the parts on The Wall, I believe. They have a great keyboard player, Dom, who deputizes for what Rick Wright did for that band, which was absolutely insane, the sound effects. And as I say, Lee on lead and Nick Mason on drums, who is, I think, 74. And if I could play drums as well as him at 74, I would be a very happy man. You have to be super fit to pull it off. And a lot of people will wrongly say about Nick that he's, you know, had a very easy job, because people think about songs like Comfortably Numb, which has the world's most boring drum beat in it. Listen to some of the early stuff. Brian, that's aimed at you again. He was incredibly creative, and the whole band is absolutely tight as hell. So we saw them 2 years ago. I took the wife. I wish I'd have taken some Fungibles. I tell you, that was the gig for Fungibles. And, you know, you could just tell by watching them that they have an absolute great time on stage. But I was chatting to Lee, I'm going to say, end of last year. He's very into his effects, as we'll find out. And he asked whether we had anything that was similar to a Butler tube driver. And I think he's also got a Tumnus in his arsenal. So he sort of swapped a few messages. I think we've now sent him a Fuzztration to try out too. And that's when I asked you to go and tell me what you know about the Butler tube driver there, Bri.
Oh, I know. Yeah, quite a bit about it. I think we sent a Leviathan to Gilmore at one point. I don't remember if we sent a Velvet Fuzz or not. But I know we sent some, we probably sent some other stuff too, but I remember we definitely sent a Leviathan at one point. So I remember talking to the tech quite a bit about it. And the main complaint was, this isn't a Big Muff. I know you wanted a different kind of fuzz to try. that's kind of what I'm saying. But you get that. I mean, that's part of the whole pedal game is, I want a different overdrive. It doesn't sound as good as my full drive. You know, like, well, it's because it's a Tube Screamer. You're used to it. You know, it's a Tube Screamer circuit.
So Gilmore never returned the pedals, though?
No, we would know. No, I don't. Nah.
And I believe that's Lee joining us now under the randomly picked name of Understanding Skywalker. Nice work, Squadcast. So, yeah, we're privileged to be joined by Lee Harris from Sourceful of Secrets, as I just said, and the Blockheads. Hi, Lee. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for having me. Nick Mason's Sourceful of Secrets.
Sorry, my bad. I've just had to explain to Brian who Nick Mason was. He was like, sure. I've never heard of him.
He's a car guy. He's into cars.
he really is
now
into
you
cars,
have my
Blake.
Attention. Oh, yeah, I like cars.
I think he had a Ferrari 250 at one point, didn't he?
Do you know something? It's really bad because all of that is completely lost on me because I'm not a car guy.
he has
something like, I think he has a Ferrari that's worth about £40 million or thereabouts.
Wow. That's quite a few ES355s you could buy with that money, Brian.
even Gibsons at that. Multiple
Well,
Gibsons.
Steady on there. You could maybe buy one or two Gibsons for that.
Right.
So, he is a big car guy. I've randomly got one of his business cards, but I'll tell my Nick Mason story a little bit later.
Okay. So Lee, so as I said to the other guys before we got started, the large percentage of our listeners are, like Brian and myself, just ignorant American rednecks, not to insult anybody.
No, they're but, not.
Accurate. Pretty accurate here.
Fake news.
Yeah. So it might be a good thing to get the, you know, maybe the 30,000 foot view of you and what you do so we can fill them in before we go into just random gear conversation.
So with the Sourceful of Secrets project, I take it.
Probably makes sense.
Yeah. So because if we go on about the other one, no one will know what we're talking about with the Blockheads because you guys didn't even know what they were, which is totally understandable.
I have to educate.
Richard did. I thought he was saying injury. I'm like, what about getting hurt?
Which is actually really funny because there's an actor called Martin Freeman who was in The Hobbit and in The English Office. And he really liked Ian Dury and the Blockheads. And he thought that his name was Ian Dury, like injury, because it was kind of like a punk band. So he thought that was his name, injury. Anyway, I digress. So the project...
Welcome to the Chasing Tone podcast. Yeah.
So they're just free associate all over the place. So with this project, Nick Mason's Sourceful of Secrets, it just came about really because I wanted to play again. And I'd moved to France where the internet is really bad. The internet speed's really bad.
As we've discovered.
I built and renovated part of our house into a sort of vacation rentals. And I'd taken a break from playing. And then my friend Guy Pratt, who plays bass with... played bass with Pink Floyd when Roger Waters left and carried on playing with David Gilmour, was on about 3 hours away on tour for David's solo album at the time, which is called Rattle That Lock. So I went to see them and I hadn't played for about maybe 2.5 years or so. And I came away from that thinking, oh man, I really miss playing. You know, it really enthused
me. Great album, great tour.
It is a great album, I think, and so do you. Yeah. And so I came back and I didn't really have a lot of pedals. I started looking at what Gilmour was using and bought a few things, and a year went by and they came back again and I went to see them again. And during that show, I was just thinking, I really miss playing. I'd love to play with Guy again because we'd played before. And I had the idea for putting this thing together with, if Nick was interested in playing the early Pink Floyd stuff, simply because there are like so many tribute bands all playing the same set list from, you know, the 1994 tour. So they're all playing Comfortably Numb and Money, which is great. But, you know, I don't think Guy would have been interested in going out and playing all that stuff, especially not with David. And cut a long story short, Nick was interested, and, you know, we've now released an album and a Blu-ray, and that all came out back in September. And then obviously we all know what came along. So we didn't do anything. Last year, I think we've actually rescheduled our tours, I think, two or three times now. So we were stopped in our tracks, as everyone else was. And
yeah. I mean, Guy's obviously done quite a lot of podcasting in the year off. How have you been filling your time? Buying effects pedals?
No, I think I've practically got them all.
Impossible.
I feel like everyone, when they say that they've, you know, they've done Netflix, I kind of, I've just done so many pedals now.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah. I'm going to steal that.
Do you know what? I've done a couple of remote sessions from home for the other guitar player in the band, Gary Kemp. He's just done a solo album. So I've played on, I did some lap steel stuff on that, and a friend of mine called Jeff Very Slate. Cool. So I've been doing a bit of that, but mostly not an awful lot. I've done Netflix. There you go.
I've completed Netflix. I'm on to the next level.
Right, I finished the internet. We're done with it.
Yeah.
You can scroll no further. You have reached the bottom of the feed.
Right.
So what does your board look like for this project?
Yeah, so the boards, I've changed it now, but the board that I went out with, which did about 73 shows or so, was like 14 pedals. And the reason it was that many was because...
Small then.
Yeah.
Yeah,
funny.
That's all. All right.
Well, no, the funny thing was the guys at the Gig Rig put it together for me. And they got Chris at Custom Pedal Boards to make the board. And he kept saying, but, you know, it's going to be really heavy. You can't get it on a plane and you're going to have to carry it. And I was like, no, I don't have to carry it. So
it has to be carried.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. We just need it to be what it is. So right. As they say in The Irishman, it's what it is. I'm trying to think. Yeah, so what happened was I ended up, because I'm in France, kind of in the middle of nowhere, and there's no one around here who can put pedal boards together, and I really didn't fancy doing it. I bought all these pedals, got them over to the Gig Rig guys, and they just put everything together for me. And I plugged in and hoped that all these pedals that I'd bought would do what everyone on the internet said they would do. And they kind of did. I then got into scrapes, like when we got to a very hot Europe in the summer last year, and, you know, two of the pedals suddenly didn't work because they were germanium fuzzes. So, you know, you start, I think, you know, I'm someone who didn't really have an awful lot of, I didn't have a lot of knowledge about pedals. I didn't know about stuff like that. So it's all been a learning curve for me. I was always a, you know, plug into an amp guy. And of course I got the bug as soon as I started doing this project.
Well, I'm not going to lie. I saw you guys live in Salisbury, and before you came on stage, I was duty bound to go and have a little look at the pedal boards of you and Guy and Gary, I guess. Yeah. I saw at least one delay flashing away. I think you may have had two on the board.
But there were two.
Bit through some of the pedals you've got on that tour then.
So there were two Free the Tone flight times. There's a Free the Tone EQ on it. I've got a King of Tone, which I'm supposed to say that I waited in line for, but I'm not going to lie. And it's okay, Mike will be okay with that. And an analog bicomp, and Analog Man. There would have been an NKT275. That's a germanium one, isn't it? I think. And
I think so. Yeah, I think it is.
That's the one that went quiet on me, and then it was something like 100 degrees on the stage, you know. And then we had trying to think what else there was.
Yeah, that's his fuzz face.
And that's centigrade, not Fahrenheit, Brian. I'm just going to point that out.
Oh yeah.
Gotcha.
99 degrees in the shade. And then what was there? I'm trying to think what else there is on there.
Richard keeps talking about this tube driver thing that you're crazy about.
Oh, yeah. Did you get, you got one, didn't you?
I do have one, yeah.
What do you make of it, Brian?
I've had several over the years. I mean, it does what it does.
Yes.
I'm not the biggest fan of it for what the kind of stuff that I do.
Yeah.
But it definitely, it's unique, and it's patented, really. So you don't see really too many clones.
No.
Or at least not, there shouldn't be. Unless it's just somebody somewhere that ends up making one. But as far as companies go, you can't really make one unless you license it from BK Butler.
Yeah. What it does is it does give you, if you're blasting it out through a loud amp, it does give you that Gilmore sound. And that's what he's been using, I think, for the last 25, 6, 7 years or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get things that sound like it, but nothing's ever exact, you know. And I was doing my head in on this last year because I paired my pedal down to my board down to about 7 pedals. And I had I had 3 of them on the board like David does. And I just thought, do you know what? I'm in this position where I don't really have to go out and be like I'm in a tribute band, because we kind of make the things our own in a way. And I felt, I don't want to do that. And so I was putting all these other pedals on the board. And eventually, 3 or 4 days ago, I just thought, nah, it's got to be the tube driver for that sound, because it's the sound people expect to hear. And it's quite interesting on doing it on the old tunes, because he didn't have that back then. So kind of it will sound like if he was playing the tunes now, which he isn't. I'm going to use that. But I think the other ones I had on the board were a couple of Free the Tone, the String Slinger, and I forgot the Red Mist. That was the other one. And I was using the Red Mist for the Syd Barrett tunes, because it sounded very, for want of a better description, it just sounded very sort of 60s. But Adrian Thorpe at Thorpe Effects is actually working on a pedal that basically sounds exactly like the Selma treble and bass amp that Syd used back in the day. And I've been over and had a play for it, and it was spot on. I mean, it really was. Mm-hmm. I had an isolated track of Syd's from the first album that I took down, listened to it, and it was fantastic. He's still working on that, so I'm hoping that will be ready for when we go back out.
Yeah, Adrian's a good guy.
He's lovely. He's lovely.
Yeah.
So, and I'm assuming as you put the project together, as it were, you've known Nick for a fair amount of time. Is that fair to say?
I actually got to Nick through Guy.
Okay.
I went to Guy with the
contact.
Yeah, I went to Guy with the idea. He said, that's a really good idea, but he'll never go for it. Probably because Nick, I think he'd only played, a handful of times in the last 25 years or so. And I think, so I think about a month went by and I went back to Guy and said, do you know what? I can't shake this idea. How do I get the idea to him? And he went, okay, write it out properly and I'll get it to him. And he sent it off to Nick. He said something like, this may be mad, but I thought you should see this. And he sent it to Nick. And about an hour later, Nick wrote back, not mad, interesting. And we had a meeting 3 months later in February 17. And that's when I met Nick. And Guy wasn't there yet. And Nick said to me, so what have you been up to? Probably expected me to reel off a whole list of famous people that I've been doing sessions with. And I answered, I've been building a house.
Sounds like a man after your heart, Brian.
Exactly.
I think he thought that was quite intriguing, I think. And that was that. So I didn't know him before then, but we're all very friendly now.
Nick is clearly a legend musically, and in England he's also, you know, very well regarded and I guess well loved, because they were a fantastic band in their prime, clearly, and you know he was well known. I have a funny Nick Mason story, which comes from about 20 years ago when I ended up buying the most expensive signed drumsticks in the world, I believe, although I might be proved wrong after this. But I got involved in a company that was making T-top roofs for Lotus Elise sports cars, and I invested tens of thousands into this company. And Nick's daughter, so she had a Lotus Elise and wanted one of these roofs, and I said, we'll get you a roof. Can you get me a set of signed drumsticks? She was like, yeah, absolutely. And in my cabinet behind me, I've got a set, inscribed to me, which at the time I thought were rare. I'm led to believe that actually he signs quite a lot of drumsticks. But said company went bust. I lost enough money to buy a decent family car and a Gibson 355, not a Ferrari. That's all I've got to show for it is those two drums.
drumsticks.
But hey, I love them. I've never played
them.
See,
there you go. See, another way that Pink Floyd has ruined your life.
He does. He probably does sign a lot of drumsticks. One of his favorite lines is with his book. He wrote an autobiography, which is actually a lot of photographs as well. It's a big book. It's about like a coffee table book. And people always bring it to gigs. The weird thing is, at gigs is at the end of the show when people just put up like all these big hardback books and albums to sign, as if an artist is going to stand on stage and sign lots of stuff at the end of a show. But anyway, he one of his favorite lines is, oh, I see you have a rare unsigned copy of the book.
my copy is signed, I'm not gonna lie. I have one of his business cards because a friend of mine did some charity work with him and he showed it to me and I said, oh, let me have that. So I have his mobile number, and there have been at least one or two times I'll be like, should I just text him, just see how he's doing, see if he wants to have
drunk 2 a.m. text messages.
Exactly.
I love you so much.
Love you, Gordon. Well,
I'm sure
Nick,
you would.
I know you don't know me, but I love you, man. I love you.
Yeah, but I mean, obviously, he's getting on a bit, and I've seen you guys play, and he played through the set, and to my ears, did not drop a beat. How the hell does he manage that? Must be 73, 74 now.
Well, no, he's actually he's going to be 78 in January. But his fond of telling us that his doctor did. When we were picking the set list, his doctor did ask him to not play anything with a tempo faster than his heartbeat. Which actually isn't all that difficult.
The amount of caffeine Brian's drunk today, that would be some jungle or
speed
or
metal.
Some gavel. Speed metal. So let me ask you a little bit about your guitars, because I absolutely noticed, I think it was an Aztec Gold Strat you were playing. Let the listeners know a little bit about your guitars.
This is when I forget what they are. So I do have that, and I, for some reason, I know what it was. I didn't want to be the guy who had a black Strat in the band. In fact, none of us have a black Strat in the band. Well, Gary does. Gary did buy one of those Gilmore Custom Shop black Strats, and Guy was given one which actually has a, the back plate has a, you know, to Guy from David and a kiss on it. But I didn't want to be the guy with the black Strat. So I went the other way and thought I'll get a gold guitar, hence that gold Strat, which I think Mike Clement, who looks after my gear when we were on the road, who also happens to be Tony Iommi's tech, thought I'd name drop there.
Now Brian's listening.
another
Tony
English
Iommi
guitar
used to
player.
Play Motley Crue in 84, right?
He did loads of Mike Varney shrapnel record stuff. Mike didn't like the tuners that were on it, because if you need to change a string, you know, things like that, I just say, well, look, just do what you need to do. I'm not that precious about things like that. So there's that. There's a Gray Guitars Admiral, which is basically like a Telecaster.
There you go.
I'm trying to think. Well, what else do I use? I've gone completely blank because it's been July 19 was the last time we were on stage, and actually all of my gear all my gear is in the UK. So I tell you what the other thing is, which I shouldn't have forgotten, is when we got back from doing our American tour, Nick gifted us, as you would say in America, he gifted Gary and I a replica of Sid Barrett's mirror guitar, which was an Esquire, but it was actually made for us by Phil Taylor, who is David Gilmour's tech. Well, probably more than his tech. He looks after all the equipment. He's the head of backline for the Floyd. So that was pretty cool. And I used that in the video, in the concert we did at the Roundhouse that was filmed and recorded.
I'm pretty sure you told me that you had to only buy gold guitars just to piss off Gary Kemp, having written Spandau Ballet's hit song Gold. Is that not the case?
No, the case was I got that gold guitar, and then I realized, hold on a minute, I'm in a band with the guy who wrote Gold. What am I doing? You know, and I
if
did.
If you don't turn up in a gold suit next time, I'm going to be disappointed. I want a gold lame suit.
If I carry on eating the way I am, there's no way that's going to happen. I think that was it. I think I also use a Gibson, an acoustic that Gary lends me, because otherwise I would have had to have bought another acoustic guitar just for a 3-minute song. So I don't even know what it is. It's some expensive Gibson guitar. But I have had the custom shop have made me a gold Telecaster to go with the Strat that's got a Bixby on it, which I haven't seen yet. It's gone back to England and then the coronavirus hit, so I haven't seen it. And a Music Man, there's a Music Man Albert Lee model that I got that used to belong to Walter Becker from Steely Dan. There you go, an American guitar player. There you go.
He bought a fair few of our pedals, I think, actually, Brian. I remember when his stuff got auctioned, there was a fair few Wamplers in his collection.
That's the auction that I got it in, and I saw there were loads of pedals, and there were a few Wamplers, definitely.
Yeah, it's always weird because you just never know really who's using your stuff, because most artists very seldom most huge artists, if they want something, they'll just buy it.
Yeah.
Most of them don't say, hey, can I get a 10% discount or whatever? They're just like, just buy a bunch of stuff and I'll sort through and figure out what I want, you know? So you never really know who's using your stuff.
Absolutely. When I got I bought three of his guitars, and when they arrived, one of them actually had the Amex bill from the Chicago music shop. He'd bought stuff in. It was like $10,000 worth of stuff he'd bought. He clearly hadn't gone to Dennis Fano or whoever it was and said, can I have a discount? You know, just bought it all.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's been several times where a music store will say, hey, I don't want to name drop this particular person, but they say, hey, this person just bought like, you know, 15,000. They basically were sitting in a hotel room bored and just ended up buying a bunch of gear. And they bought like one of everything.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you're like, well, that's cool. But it kind of is cooler if you see them using it. Yeah. Like I remember it's been when we were first kind of really getting started about around 2000, maybe 10 or so. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine was backstage with Jeff Beck and said that he was using one of our Euphoria pedals. And I was like, Jeff Beck is using one of my pedals? That's pretty cool. I mean, I don't know Jeff. I've never met Jeff. He just somehow got a hold of one and was using it, you know? And fantastic. I mean, that to me is, you know, that's pretty awesome.
Absolutely.
It is awesome. And it for me, when I, you know, obviously I have a small role in designing the pedals with you, Brian. And when I see them go to people who I look up to, it's absolutely mind-blowing sometimes, and it's the best part of this job, which reminds me, actually, we have sent you out a Fuzztration, Lee.
Yes.
And I hope
that
gets some use. I'd love to hear you put some Pink Floyd numbers through it. I was telling the chaps earlier, I've just set my ES5 MIDI switcher up, and I have 20 Floyd-related patches on it now. that's an hour's worth of playthrough. Brian cannot wait to hear it.
Oh yeah, I was going to ask you if you could set my MIDI switcher up the same. That way I could enjoy an hour of Pink Floyd songs. It'd be fantastic.
When I started buying all these pedals about 3 or 4 years ago, I actually, I hadn't been looking at anything on YouTube involving guitar, and I think I must have come across. Mick and Dan doing that pedal show. And then I came across this guy who was, I found really interesting. And I had no idea that he had an effects company, because he had like these big, I think it was a parametric EQ and an Empress parametric and a Boss G7. And he was just going through why it's good to have EQ pedals. And it was you, Brian. And
that sounds like a video I made.
Yeah, yeah. And you weren't even showcasing your own pedals, and I had no idea that that you were a pedal maker. So I was watching this thing. That's actually a really cool idea. And I bought an EQ pedal. Wasn't one of yours. I don't know if you do one. I found all these videos quite engrossing, but you're one of the first people that I found. So it's really cool to be on here with you.
I'm glad you later on went to find quality channels. I'm kidding.
Oh, Brian, don't knock yourself. Your video, and I'm the same actually, Lee. I ended up here because I bought a Sovereign from a shop local to me, and then nerded out about it because I loved it. And I was like, let me check out on the internet. And I came across a video with our good friend Henning Pawley, Bry. And he was really prodding you quite severely about the technicalities of it. So you came on. I was like, wow, that's the guy that made the pedal. How did he get him? How does this whole industry work? And what are pedals again? You are pedal famous, Bry. Don't forget it, dude.
Do you know?
I guess there's worse things to be, huh?
One of the things I was thinking when I was coming on here earlier on was when I first started playing, my dad bought me a few pedals. I had a Yamaha compressor, a terrible Dunlop fuzz that was, I think it was like a Band of Gypsies fuzz or a Hendrix fuzz or something, but it was not very good, and a delay pedal. But I had no idea about, you know, what order they should go in. I just thought, well, I've got all these pedals. So at any one time, I would just plug them in any order and just think, well, you know, I've got them, they're on, they should be working, you know. And, they just sound different every time I put them on because they were never in the right order. I had delay before Dunlop, you know, before the fuzz, and oh, God knows what was going on.
Isn't that so the right order?
I it might be for someone, you know, but, you know, I just thought I was always having off days every now and then, you know, it was just terrible. And it wasn't. And then I think the next thing that happened was I got one of those Digitech processors, you know, the Legend or something. And that was all right because everything was in the right order, you know.
Right. So,
and then the next thing happened was I just started playing through an amp because I was playing lots of blues and then some funk stuff, and I was playing it through the amp. So when I was doing this project and went to buy pedals, finally, from, you know, with the magic of YouTube and the internet, which wasn't around in 1991 when I was, you know, I'd been playing for 4 years by then, I learned about the right order to put things in, or at least, you know, maybe not the right order, but, you know, the conventional order. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think it's a shame some pedals, or maybe all pedals, they should come with, you know, the instructions should maybe say, give an example of the order they should go in, because there must be loads of guys who don't know what they're doing.
You know what, Richard? That's actually a really good idea.
I was going to say, I'm just going to copyright this right now. If anyone is listening to this, that's a Wampler product there. Thank you, Lee. I'll send you the fiver later, my friend.
I did actually send it, the idea, back to me in the self-addressed envelope.
Well, that's a great idea.
No, I just think, you know, because of course, you know, we all kind of know, but, you know, some people don't. And, you know, people of all ages are buying guitars and pedals. They don't know necessarily what order it might work in.
Metal Zone, especially followed by Metal Zone, followed by Metal Zone.
No. Reverb into Metal Zone is the way you do it. Trust me on this.
Yes. Yeah. That sounds like a mountain. That sounds like a room full of bees is what that sounds like.
One thing that I noted to myself while I was doing the mixing on this latest project, it was like, oh, I don't really know that much about mixing. That's not my thing. But because I've played with pedals for so long and experimented with so many weird orders and stuff, I kind of had an inherent idea of how to chain like the different plugins for different things to get different sounds that I don't think I would have understood having not been a huge effects nerd for so many years. I was like, oh yeah, I don't want to put the reverb on this, you know, on this particular one before my compressor, because that'll take, you know, that's not doing what I want it to do in that case. So it's kind of weird how playing with this can translate into other areas of creating sound and whatnot.
Yep. Very true.
You know, well, there's things like...
Hey guys,
what were you going to say?
I'm going to have to wrap it up in just a minute.
Cool.
But if someone wants to go look for your stuff, where should they go look for your stuff?
Oh, so, well, I'm really on, I'm on Instagram as Mr. MR Lee Harris, and Facebook, I think I'm Lee Harris Official, I think. But yeah, I mean, that's it. I'm not a
Blu-ray.
I'm not an influencer or anything. Now, you'll find pictures of me and my dog, you know, and my wife, Danny, and, you know, in our house in France and stuff.
Same as me and Brian, except we don't live in France.
Yeah.
But there's a Blu-ray out of the Roundhouse gig, right?
There is a Blu-ray out. Nick Mason's Sourceful of Secrets live at the Roundhouse. There's a Blu-ray and a DVD and a CD. I think the CD comes with a DVD and a vinyl as well.
And it's obviously available on streaming. And I have to say, I've streamed it a fair few times. And Brian, I know after this, you're going to go stick it on and chill out with some beautiful early Floyd vibes, courtesy.
Oh, yeah. I'm pulling it up right now on Spotify. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes. Blake, I know you're a little bit more open-minded. Totally check it out, dude. You're going to love it. Lee, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have you?
You sent me those links earlier. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was doing my homework. Yeah, good man. Good stuff.
But yeah, Lee, thank you so much for coming on. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for listening to the Chasing Tone podcast. As always, if you have any comments, questions, or concerns, you can email podcast@wamplerpedals.com. That goes straight to me. Email Blake, email info@tonemob.com. And Richard is richard@wamplerpedals.com. If you like this podcast, make sure to share it with your friends and others who might like it. If you'd like to show your support for the show, the simplest and free way to do that is just simply to share this with a friend. Maybe leave a review and a rating wherever you normally get your podcasts. Make sure to check out Blake's podcast called The Tone Mob. It's a great one as well. And make sure to check out Wampler Pedals, that's our website, for blogs, videos, and of course, our little toneful gadgets, our little pedals and amplifier. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next week.